storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Brian Mayardis. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast episode, man. The world is on fire. I'm going to start off by saying this, and I mean this. The way of life that you have enjoyed for the last 500 years is over. Oftentimes, the ancestors whom in the African tradition are as important and even more important than the gods. The gods that are typically invoked, so far as I can tell, are closer to this realm than the ancestors are. So to invoke ancestral energy is to go above the gods. Not the creator. The creator is different. But to go above the gods. There are elders within the ancestral realm who can intervene and intercede on your behalf, even more so than the gods. If the elder is strong enough, then they become like a god. In preparing this show, oftentimes I don't do as much preparation as you may think. Sometimes I do a lot more than you may think, but I often struggle with whether or not to release a certain episode when I release it, because there are times when I look and I say, well, this has nothing to do with what's going on, so why should I release it? A great example of that is my episode on the role of government. Even though one might argue, well, it was in the middle of the primary season, people were talking about what the government should and should not do. So it has a lot of relevancy. But to me, I looked at that particular episode and said, yeah, but it's a conversation that may go through people's heads, just like in one ear, out the other, because it's too thorough, it's too deep. Nonetheless, I released it anyway. And less than a month later, or about a month later, COVID-19 ravaged through the country, and there was a question that everybody had on their lips. What is the role of government in the moment of crisis? There has been other times when I have had such conflicts within myself. A great example, at the end of last year, I was going to produce. Actually, I did produce it. I was going to release. I mean, I had it set. I had it ready to go. I had it queued up. I was going to release an episode on police violence. And I was going to make some suggestions in that episode of what should be done about police violence and how maybe we need to rethink policing and get away from putting all this money into policing and start shifting that to de-escalation and actually healing communities. I decided not to release that. I thought it was too radical. Only to have what has transpired over the past couple of weeks. Today is June the 14th, by the way, 2020. Forced me to have to look at that episode again, and I finally did release it about a week or so ago. In response to what had happened to George Floyd, and this is not an episode technically about George Floyd, I released a 5-part episode. It was just about all commentary outside of this one clip that I used from Dr. King. But I titled it, Racism, A Conversation Whose Time Has Come, and I pulled that title from another group of podcasts that I had started working on back in February called Racism, An Idea Whose Time Has Come, moving from racism as a conversational piece. I had 4 parts, should I say, that I was going to include in that that episode. 2 of them made it into this current configuration. One of the parts I will likely publish soon, because it actually is very relevant, especially to the Democratic Party. It deals with the fact that the Democratic Party built its legacy, built its functionality over the past 40 years on kicking black people. So I might end up doing that. But I'm telling you all this for one simple reason. Oftentimes, I'm in conflict with publishing specific episodes. I record way more episodes than I publish. Way more. If I publish 14 episodes in a year, I record probably, and actually last year I can tell you, I published around 14 episodes, and I recorded around 80, or at least enough material for 80. The same was true with 2018. The same was true with 2017. And the same is true this year. I have tons of stuff that I have recorded. Some of it I have re-recorded because I didn't think it sounded correctly, you know, things like that. And I've just not release them because of one reason or another. So, with this particular episode, I made a mention of this early in March when I recorded and released my 2 parts on COVID-19. Obviously, you can see that this is an extension of that. I said then that this virus essentially marked a line in the sand. The way that we lived wasn't sustainable anymore. We came up against something powerful. Now, people want to blame Bill Gates. People want to blame Bill Gates, the WHO, and various other people and say, well, these are the people who started it, and they're the ones who are perpetuating this thing. And I don't laugh at it, but I have to wonder about where our mentality is. Europeans have had a hate-filled relationship with nature. On the one hand, they sought to control it because it was too dangerous. And on the other hand, they sought to dominate it because they thought they were better than it. Remember the Titanic? They hate nature, yet they seek to control it because they see it as powerful. It is from this mindset that I believe so many of these conspiracies are emanating. On the one hand, Bill Gates is very wealthy, so he is much more powerful than nature. So he could release a virus that cripples the world economy because he is much more powerful than nature. He's basically a walking god. But on the other hand, the result of climate change is causing problems after problem after problem. And many people don't even want to acknowledge that. They don't even want to acknowledge it. Because, yes, nature has its capacity to be strong, hurricanes, tornadoes, but those are microcosms. They don't represent the macro, which is weird to think about, I know, but this is how these people's minds work. In bursts, nature is strong. But together, it's weak. So people like Bill Gates can control it and manipulate it and overrun it. Obviously, for anybody who knows the history of this planet, they know nature, for what it can do on a micro level, can do tremendous damage on a macro level. All we need to do is look back at the last ice age and the scale of what that actually entailed. I mean, it is fascinating to realize just what that ice age was. But when you don't have a respect for nature, when you don't see yourself as a part in nature, as a partner to nature, as a caretaker for nature, as a person, as a being who was created with natural substances, then nature is just a plaything. It is incapable of fighting back against anything you do because you are better than it. But this is a mistake. COVID-19 was first believed to come from bats. Bats are very ancient. They are a very ancient and powerful symbol. We don't often think about it because we have this thing called the Batman. But there is something to the fact that one of the most beloved iconic characters in the modern age is it gains his strength, his mystery, his mythology from a bat. Bats have always been placed in a respectable position, even amongst the Western world. But now, they think that it might come from this ancient, and my mind just completely went blank on what it's called, this ancient dinosaur-looking reptile that is endangered. But it looks like a dinosaur. They think that it could have come from that. Now, for a person like me who looks for the lessons in all of this, as soon as I saw this creature, which I'm drawing a complete blank on what it's called, I thought back to Avatar, the movie Avatar, and how those animals fought back against the destructive tendencies of man. And I said to myself, these people have thought that Mother Nature was weak. And Mother Nature has crippled them with something so small that you need a microscope to see it. They might want to realize what she's doing. It crippled the economic structure that has been feeding the cancerous nature of this society and the civilization which it supposedly heads. It crippled that entire edifice in less than 2 months. Even if it was mistakenly released from some Chinese lab or some American lab, don't think that that wasn't, that was just merely by accident. Mother Nature works in very interesting ways. Either way, it crippled us. And what happened? What was the response to that crippling? Skies cleared up. Smog, cleared up. Waters clarified. This is all about energy, ladies and gentlemen. I was saying to a man who does astrology, astrological reading, supposedly being able to predict future events globally. And I said to him that his understanding of the magnetic field of the planet is interesting because the magnetic field, in his mind, only interacts with the cosmos. He doesn't believe that that magnetic field represents an energy network that exists throughout the entire planet, which is something that all indigenous people, this guy's white, he's a European, well, this is something that all indigenous people have always and continue to maintain to this day, that there is an energy, a spiritual soul force energy that permeates everything on this planet. With the smog clearing up, with the waters clearing up, I made a statement to a friend of mine, and I'll make it to you. And looking at what was going on, I said, you know something? Mother Nature hit us with this virus to make us think about what we are doing and to ask us to change. But in the meantime, she is gathering her strength. And if we choose wrong, the pain is going to be severe. As I heard stories of smog clearing up throughout the world, waters clearing up throughout the world, I remembered something. In 2006, I watched a PBS special, and I used part of it in my episode about global warming. In this PBS special, which I believe came originally from the BBC, this man in the late 1990s had a theory. And his theory was this, that all of the planes that were flying around the country, leaving chemtrails, leaving exhaust, that those trails We're acting like clouds and reflecting sunlight that otherwise would be hitting the ground, reflecting that sunlight back out into space. Meaning it was those chemtrails were actually decreasing the warmth of the planet. They were suppressing, basically, one of the arguments he made, they were suppressing the totality of global warming. That if it had not been for those chemtrails, that we would have seen a more dramatic increase in temperatures. Now, why was this? This was because in those chemtrails and in the various substances that industries were leaking into the air, you had particles of dirt, silt, and that silt was causing water to condense around them. That's what silt and dirt does in the atmosphere. That was causing clouds, which was causing sunlight to not reach the ground. It was being reflected back into space. That was literally cooling the planet down. Now, he had no way of really testing this. He ran some tests out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean where the sky is definitely clearer. But those experiments, as good as they were, couldn't take the place of an experiment on a continent like like North America or Europe, where you had hundreds, sometimes thousands, of planes flying each and every day. Only if there was some way for him to do that. Enter September 11, 2001. September 11, 2001, the World Trade Center's collapse. What happens? There's a shutdown nationwide of all airplanes. Within 6 hours, there's not a plane in the air. This man goes to work. He starts looking at temperatures in the country for the days that those airplanes remained grounded. And what he found was, remember, this is coming from complete memory here, is that there was a swing of about 1 degree for those days. And that was a surprise. But personally, I remember the weather for the next couple of years after that. Now, mind you, I didn't watch this piece on global dimming until 2006. But I was still able to perceive that there was something different in the weather patterns over the next 3 or 4 years. Particularly, I remember 2001, that year, that Thanksgiving. A year earlier, Thanksgiving was covered with snow. It was cold, it was chilly, and it was cold throughout all the rest of November into December. It was a very normal Western New York winter. And, well, technically not winter, but the end of autumn. The following year, 2001, it was like 50 degrees. I mean, this wasn't unheard of, but it was 50 degrees, and we hadn't had much snow, if any, and that continued on until, like, the beginning of January. It was a very strange year. The following year, we had a very drastic shift, where it was very cold, very snowy, incredible snow, fall totals. It was a very seesaw type of couple of years. I even recall that during 2001, the autumn, My brother and I being outside playing football, catch actually, when he returned home from school. And even we were talking about, you know, the skies look really bright. It's very strange. Very nice, but very strange. What am I trying to tell you, ladies and gentlemen? This year, we had a hurricane season that started before the official hurricane dates actually arrived. We had a named tropical storm earlier than June 1st. We have had significantly decreased airplane travel in this country for the better part of 2.5-3 months. And there's questions on whether or not it's going to return to normal anytime soon. My point is this. If this man was right, which it looks like he was right from all of the data that was gathered on September 11th and afterwards, and if my perception is correct, which is that you could see there was a noticeable shift and change in the weather because of that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a very interesting decade. Because I've always wondered if the imbalance that had been thrown off by all of those planes, if by grounding those planes just for that, I think it was about a week. I have always wondered if just by grounding the planes for a week, if that impacted weather patterns for much of the last, or for much of the next 8 to 9, maybe even 10 years. I wondered what impact did that actually have? How many years did that last? Some people would probably say, well, that's a stupid thing to wonder, man. It's, you know, it might have lasted for a couple of months. But, ladies and gentlemen, you're talking about nature. Nothing lasts just for a couple months. What was so interesting about 2001 into 2002, we did have a small winter period, but it was very small and it was very short. And we went into summer rather quickly. By, I believe it was the middle of April, we were pretty much into summer. And then we had a very hot summer in 2002. Then a very cold winter in 2002 into 2003. There are changes that are going to come from this. And I don't believe people are ready for that. I don't believe we have prepared ourselves for the fact that we have done so much damage. And because we have been made to stop doing that damage, people think that it's not going to have an impact. It is going to have an impact. It will have an impact. Now, I started off this by saying that our way of life, the way that we have been living, is over. Ladies and gentlemen, it is over. It's done. If what scientists say are correct, and I believe what they're saying is correct, because I see the newspapers trying to shift the narrative to make people believe that everything is okay now. So that, okay, we can start opening up the economy, forget about, you know, the virus, it's not going to be as bad as people think, yada, yada, yada. But most of the people that I'm seeing in the scientific community, and I'm not counting Fauci here because he's been all over the board and map on a number of things, but most of the people who's been speaking, like Ostendorf, they say, look, this thing's going to be with us at least for a couple of years doing this thing. So you might want to just prepare yourself for that. That's going to alter this country. It's going to alter this economy. It's going to alter this world. It is going to alter the way that we do things. Now, here's the interesting part. One of the consequences of this virus has been people have spent a lot more time with family. For a society that really hates family, look, you may hate the Christian right, but the Christian right has one thing correct. This society butchers families. It tears families apart. Absolutely just eviscerates them. Well, it's quite interesting that as a result of this virus, more and more people have gotten to spend time with their families. During the NFL draft, actually, one GM, was saying that it was wonderful that he has, you know, in years past, during that period of time, he'd be working, you know, 12 to 14 hours a day, but he's home. People are discovering that a lot of things that they thought needed to be done in the office, away from families, away from friends, the majority of this stuff can be condensed into 3 or 4 hours and get done. The majority of this stuff can be done in 3 or 4 hours and you could have the rest of your life back. When I say that the old way is done, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not being hyperbolic here. I'm telling you the truth. We should be at a time period in the evolution of humanity where if you are working more than 20 to 25 hours a week, there's something wrong with your job. Okay? We should be at a time period in the evolution of humanity where you're paying, if at all, you're paying $20 for electricity for a full house that keeps its lights on day and night. We should be at the evolutionary point of humanity where if you're paying more than $3,000 or $4,000 for a top quality car, then you're overpaying. If you're paying 20 cents for good bread, you're overpaying. What I'm trying to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, because I know most of you are rolling your eyes right now, you know, oh my God, that's disgusting. Okay, how is it that 70 years ago you could get good bread for less than a dollar? If I remember correctly, I believe my father told me you could get good bread in the 1960s, you know, for like what was it, 50 cents. Good bread. Good quality, high quality bread. Now, of course, you're going to say because everything's gone up, the pricing has gone up. You're telling me that in the span of 60, 70 years, you went from paying 50 cents for good bread, 50 cents, to paying $4. That's not a natural climbing of costs. There is something that is inflationary that is not natural to that price. You know what it is? You're paying for names. You're not paying for quality. You're paying for names. I'll give you a really good example of this because most of you can remember this. Back in the 90s, the mid to late 90s, you'd go into a store and you could get 99-cent bags of Lay's potato chips. Now, the majority of that bag was actually filled with potato chips. Lay's has been purchased a few times. Or at least, yeah, Lay's has been purchased a few times since then. And not only has the price gone up, but you're receiving mostly air now. You're paying so other people can make tons of money for no other reason but so they can make money. Those days are done. They're done. Because, see, one, money isn't real. It's time that we realize that money isn't real. It's a figment of our imaginations. Two, money is necessary because you have way more people on this planet than you do precious metals. And that, again, is something that we're going to have to get through our heads. I know right now China and Russia are moving into just putting tons of resources into gathering gold. But really, really, guys, there's way too many people on this planet to deal with gold and silver anymore. All right? It's time to graduate to a new way of dealing in the realm of currency. We have to deal with these facts. And I mean that. Moreover, we make enough food on this planet to feed everybody like 1.5 times over. And yet we have people who are impoverished, people who are poor, people who don't have enough to eat. It's time to stop that. It is time to stop that. This virus is going to force us to come together, or else there is going to be some very dire, horrific consequences at the end of it. I can already smell it happening and see it, to be honest with you. We need to cut it. As I almost said exactly what my father would have said. We need to just cut it out. You know, we need to cut out this nonsense, these falsehoods that are not true. And there's so many of them. There's so many of them. There are so many falsehoods that are not true that it just boggles the mind. When people talk about, oh, well, you know, lifting yourself up by your bootstraps, I have to laugh at them. I'm like, wait a minute. Because the majority of people that say that are European, they're white. And I go, well, wait a minute, how did your society build its wealth? Well, my family did this. I go, how did your society build its wealth? Because in order for your family to have the opportunity to build the type of wealth that you're about to tell me about, your society had to be organized in a certain way that made that possible. How did your society, your civilization, how did they build their wealth? Well, my family, you see, you're missing the point. Your family is the micro portion. How did the macro organize itself? Because you can tell me all you want that your family worked hard, got into unions, did this, did that, and then, you know, had all this wealth at the end of it. But how did your society enable your family to do that? Because the majority of the Europeans that I talked to, their families came over, they were immigrants. Okay, well, how was your family able to come over as an immigrant to this country where they were not from and have land which they did not own when they came over? Well, they rented it from blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, where did that person get it from? Well, that person made this kind of money and then bought it from or then built it. Okay, well, where did they buy the land from? Well, they bought the land from a banker. Well, where did the banker get it from? The banker got it from in a partnership with a speculator, but also with other bankers. Okay, well, how did that happen? Well, there was this law that was passed that enabled the confiscation of Native American lands to be broken up and sold to bankers. So you got your... So your family got to live in a building that was built on land that was stolen from Native Americans. How did your society build its wealth? And by the way, how did those bankers get the money to be able to secure that land. And by secure it, I mean they had to buy off those politicians. How'd they get their money? Well, they were connected to this other bank. Well, how did that bank get their money? Well, that bank had various investments overseas and in the United States. Well, what were those investments? Well, they were investing in this plantation down in South America. And this spice network going into India. And this oriental network going into China. And some plantations in the southern portion of the United States. In other words, they built their wealth off of exploiting other people who were non-white. Well, they also had industrial interests in Europe and the United States. All right, so now you got poor Europeans getting in on the action here. But the majority of their stakeholdings came at the bereavement and grief of non-white people. Your society organized itself to enable you to build this kind of wealth by exploiting and abusing non-white people throughout the world. That's not going to stand anymore. Even to this day, Europeans in the United States, you know where their money comes from? Their money comes from other countries where predominantly non-white people exist. And when I say predominantly here, I mean predominantly. They show you images often of white-looking people living in these areas, but they're an intense minority. But they're beloved because they look white. This is over, ladies and gentlemen. It's over. This exploitative nature is over. Mother Nature is firing a warning. Because she is gathering her strength from this. I'm waiting to see what things are going to be like in October and November. Traditionally, those are when flu cases start to go up and ramp up. And then in January, February, and March is when you get your most intense spikes of hospitalization based on the flu. So I'm waiting to see what it's like. I'm hoping it's not as bad as this past year. Or else it's going to be a very long winter. But I'm going to tell you this. The way we've been doing business is over. It's over. And it's time that we start acknowledging that. We have to start thinking like that. We have to start realizing that the way we've been doing things, it can't go on. It cannot go on. I am going to stop right here because I could keep going. But I think you get the point. I do want to reiterate, though, ladies and gentlemen. Exploitation has built this society and this civilization. We now must come together. Because I'm going to tell you what, if we fail to come together now and to solve this problem and to solve the other problems which this society, this civilization has created, war will be upon this planet within the coming decade. Or maybe we'll escape it for 15 years. But you can feel the pressures already building. We must come together and we must solve these problems. Even if we have to do it on a grassroots level, on a Main Street level, away from the corporations and what have you. Even if we have to change the game at the Main Street level and refuse to play the game that they've been playing for so long in order to save the planet. We have to do it. And it's not just to save the planet, ladies and gentlemen. I need to emphasize this part. It's to save ourselves. It's not just about climate change and what have you. Remember, I said to you last year, if we were to start to do the right thing, Mother Nature wouldn't respond. I said that to you. The moment we stopped polluting, Mother Nature responded. Mother Nature responded. We don't understand it, but Mother Nature responded. Even, I saw my Native American brothers and sisters, there was a Columbus statue that was toppled. And they went and they started doing their prayer. That is powerful. And I know you hear the sirens. I'm sorry about that, guys. But they were there on the site when they toppled Columbus. And they started doing their prayer. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a message. All these people in the streets, this is spiritual. It's a message. This is about saving us as much as it's about saving Mother Nature. To my progressive Christians, guys, it's time to use your prayer for positive things. Okay, you go to the areas that you want to affect the change to. You go there once or twice a week and you pray for the changes that you need and that you want and that you desire. You do that long enough in an area, you will actually change the energetic composition of that place. I actually read a study about this like 14 years ago where a group of people meditating would go to various spots in an area which was very crime-ridden, and they would meditate there for like 30, 40 minutes. And what they found, they did that for like a month or two. What they found was during that period of time, crime went down drastically. It's time to start invoking the spiritual essence of who we are, and it's time to visualize a new world that is not about exploitation and domination, about competition. It is about cooperation, commonwealth, welfare. And the very few, and I'm telling you, it's a minority. That's why they have to yell so loud. That's why they have to control the media, because they're a minority. The minority within this public, within this world, that is against that. We can overpower them with our vision, with our love, with our ability. We can overpower them because there's more of us than there are of them. I am your brother, Brian Mary Deese. Let's open the door to a new destiny, ladies and gentlemen. This is Class War Battlefield Podcast. I'll talk to you on the next one. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone, and they're alone.